ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
I see dead people.
I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes.
Here's Johnny!
Welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich. That was a montage of some of the best lines from some of the scariest movies. You heard from The Silence of the Lambs, The Sixth Sense, Halloween, Child's Play, and The Shining. And the music was from The Exorcist. Today on All Sides Weekend, we're talking about scary movies just in time for Halloween weekend. Joining me in the studio is Hope Madden, film critic for The Other Paper. Welcome, Hope.
Thanks for having me.
Brad Keefe with Columbus Alive. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Amy.
And freelance film critic Melissa Stark. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And we want to hear from you, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What scary movie do you love to watch this time of year? What is your favorite scary movie? 614-292-8513. Let's start with a movie that is now out in theaters. It is Paranormal Activity 3. Hope, tell us about the latest installment of this scary franchise.
It's another found footage type of a film. They go back in time yet again, so we get to see sort of the origin story of the girls, the sisters, and how the haunting all began. It has a lot of really fun scares in it. It does. It's got one. It's set. It's gloriously 1988. I can't tell you how effective the set design is.
And the costumes.
Oh my God! Perfect. Yeah. They mount a camera on the base of an oscillating fan. So that, you know, you catch something just for a glimpse and then you wait for it to go all the way down inside, all the way back to see what happens. But the sort of why don't you put the camera down and help the little girl in jeopardy element really grows tiresome by this point. I mean, they've kind of played it out, I think.
Is this, we had the Scream movies coming out year after year, and then we had Saw for a while coming out year after year.
I was just going to say that.
Is this the next Halloween?
It's got to run its course at some point, but I think they both sort of found, both with the Saw movies kind of found a gross out way that got audiences, that they had one come out every Halloween for like 7 years.
Yeah, I think so.
And Paranormal Activity is that now that's kind of found that, like, that I think it's that focused attention that you have in those movies where sort of nothing goes on, and then there was like, what did I just see?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun in a theater. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know that we're going to see Paranormal Activity 9.
But yeah, I imagine we'll see 4. I don't know where they're going to go eventually with Saw, you're like, well, he's dead now, and we've seen the origin. They find places to go. As long as there's money to be had.
Exactly.
And there was a lot. It was like a fall record on the opening.
And I'll take this over Saw any day.
Yeah, and it's a very inexpensive kind of film to make as well, so the return is very good on it. And you're right, it's such a neat little package the way they have the story right now. It would almost kind of be a shame to see it go to 4. But considering, again, the opening weekend gross, probably see that.
Oh, and speaking of found footage, I want to give a shout out to one of my favorites from that I've seen. If you guys have seen Troll Hunter,
yes. It's
almost like a found footage Jaws. It was in a lot of ways was what it reminded me of. But it's streaming on Netflix now. You really ought to check that out.
Anyone else want to add anything more about Paranormal Activity 3? Is that the one to see this weekend if you want to go to the theater and see something new?
Yeah, there really are only two, you know, new release horror films out right now. And of the two, I think you're probably more likely to be happy with Paranormal Activity. That would be my guess. The Thing is the other one, which actually is not a bad film, given sort of what it is.
And it's a remake, right?
It's actually a prequel.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, let's talk about The Thing. And in this scene, Kate tells her fellow scientists her discovery that The Thing can replicate a person.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice...
We'll hear my montage again.
I wouldn't mind. I kind of love that. Yeah. I want to give a shout out also.
What are those?
I think they're fillings from someone's teeth. I found them by a puddle of blood in the shower.
Puddle of blood?
It can clone cells, but not inorganic material. It couldn't copy these. So it spit them out.
We wasted too much time already. Lush!
Listen! When I went back to check it, someone had cleaned up the blood. Someone had wiped it away. All right, so whatever it is still here.
All right, so that's The Thing. Who wants to tell me a little bit about the plot for The Thing?
I will.
Okay.
It lets you know what happens just prior to the John Carpenter 1980 version of The Thing. So it takes you to the scientists and the actual site where they find what will become The Thing. There's a crash site. There's a lot of alien spaceship exploration that you get to go on. And they're not able to generate the kind of claustrophobia that John Carpenter did. I love John Carpenter's The Thing. I love that film.
Absolutely.
And it's so terrifying in that there's nowhere for them to go. They're in the middle of the Arctic. Somehow this film, I'm not sure exactly how they managed to not get to that same level of tension, but they don't. But they also, for the most part, they don't get carried away with sort of new CGI opportunities. I mean, it's still when the things are mutating, and it's still the same kind of gross blah, body horror that you got in the Carpenter original. The third act is pretty weak, actually. They go back to the spaceship. They do get a little CGI, happy with it, which is too bad. But the best part of the film is over the closing credits. It's a great sequence, by far the strongest sequence of the entire film. And then the very last shot is, in fact, the opening of John Carpenter's The Thing, which made me happy.
Okay.
It's spooky, it's creepy, it's a bit gross, but it's not.
So it's
the
not
classic.
Very good, but sit through it all for
the credits.
2 minutes after the thing. Yeah, okay. Okay.
So not that great, but the credits are worth it.
Yay!
How often do you hear that? So The Thing is out now, and also Paranormal Activity 3 out now. And this is All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurovich. And today we're talking about scary movies. Listeners, what is your favorite scary movie? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We want to hear about your scary movies, but my panel, they have plenty that they want to talk about. 614-292-8513. I wanted to get to a newer movie, Melissa, that you mentioned to me. It's called Attack the Block. And in this scene, a teenage street gang in London, they kill their first alien.
Trying to tell me it's raining monkeys.
Ain't no monkey, man. Monkeys ain't booty.
Nah, that's some weird thing, fam. I don't even know what that is. I ain't even gonna say.
You know what that is? I'll tell you what that is. That's an alien, bruv. Believe it. Must have come from outer space trying to take over the Earth, innit? When I landed in the wrong place, though, you get the wrong place.
All right, so Melissa, tell us a little bit about this movie. I know, unfortunately, not in theaters,
yes.
But you liked it?
Very much. Actually, it was in theaters until yesterday, and I would say look for it fairly soon on home video. But basically, it's this group of young British toughs who, when you meet them at the beginning of the film, they're basically, mugging a woman. So they're not the most obvious heroes. And then an alien lands in their housing block, and they discover that it's the first line of defense in what's going to be an invasion. And so basically they don't trust the cops. They don't trust authority figures. So they decide that they're going to deal with it themselves. And it's just very clever. It's a little on the formulaic side, but it's just these are characters you rarely see. The effects were really good considering that it's a fairly low budget film. And it seems to have been developing a little bit of a cult following since it was shown in theaters around the country over the past couple of months. I mean, it was actually at Lenox for a good couple of months, which is unusual.
Has it been there the whole time, or is it back for a second run?
I think it was actually there pretty much the whole time.
It was hiding there, and I missed it over and over. Melissa invited me the first time she went, and I still haven't seen this.
Anyone else anything to add? Attack the Block.
Yeah, I loved it as well. Yeah? I thought it was a very inventive approach to an alien movie. And then the characters were hilarious and at the same time really touching. And like you said, just not the kind of thing that you generally see, not the kind of characters that you generally see.
Mm-hmm. It seemed – all I watched was the trailer and a couple of clips to find that one. It seemed – a little cheesy, but it's not. Or it's supposed to be.
I think in the tradition of B-horror sci-fi movies, yeah, it's got a little bit of a cheeseball factor to it, but it never insults the audience. It's you know, got
or its characters, really.
Yeah, exactly. It's got some nice cleverness to it. And it does kind of fill out those characters beyond their stereotypes, also including the mugging victim.
All right, so Attack the Block, look for it. Maybe you can find it somewhere, put it in your Netflix queue. Yeah. It'll be coming soon. So Attack the Block. And we also have a caller on the line who wants to talk about favorite movie, and it's The Exorcist. So first, let's hear a scene from the trailer for The Exorcist from 1973.
Look, your daughter doesn't say she's a demon. She says she's the devil himself.
I'm telling you that thing upstairs isn't my daughter. Now, I want you to tell me that you know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her mind. You tell me you know for a fact that an exorcism wouldn't do any good. You tell me that!
All right, and Lee from Columbus, why do you like The Exorcist?
Well, good morning. The Exorcist is just classic in the sense that it came from a time where you had to sit still and watch, and you weren't hit with a barrage of CGI and loud sounds and flashing lights and dramatic music. It was just pure terror. So it ranks high up on my list, number one, followed closely by The Exorcist III.
Okay.
With George C. Scott and a cameo by Patrick Ewing. You can't beat that.
All right, thank you very much, Lee. And I know we have a few people in here who like The Exorcist as well.
You know, I want to comment. Good for you for bringing up The Exorcist 3.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is an underappreciated gem. And it's a long slog, that film, and there's a lot that goes wrong with it. But there's a scene in a confessional that scared me to death. You know, and it stands out of all the horror films I've seen as a scene. It's not the film can't maintain it all the way through, but that particular scene where there's an old lady goes in to do a confession that terrified me when I saw it. And it's not like I was a kid. I was an adult when I saw Exorcist 3, and it just terrified me.
Mm-hmm.
I think both The Exorcist and The Thing hit this, like, kind of primal fear of having something inside of you. In that, like, you know, you talked about the isolation of The Thing and, you know, where can you run?
Right.
But especially, you know— And I have a friend who is kind of a-religious, who is not scared of The Exorcist because he kind of didn't have that upbringing. But, you know, if your childhood was be afraid of the devil.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And then the situation you're in is the devil's inside of you.
Yeah, no. And it's like he brought up, it's great. I mean, it's a film that's meant to be seen on a big screen, and they don't make those really as much now. I mean, it's really a big screen film, and it's just terrifying.
Actually, I would say the Paranormal Activity movies are kind of fit into that in terms of there's so many subtle details that they really do benefit from a big screen viewing. But with The Exorcist, first off, it's a great book to film adaptation. It was a great book, and it was very faithful in the film adaptation. And also that it really lulls you into this kind of, you know, this nice mother and daughter, and they have this great relationship, and they live in this great house, and then everything goes to hell, literally. But when I was, you know, when I was thinking about the films I wanted to mention, when you asked about it, I was like, all of these have one scene that just really got to me. And with this one, it was actually in the director's cut that came out not too long ago. There is that backwards
Spike
crawl walk
yeah. Oh, yeah.
down the stairs that, you know, again, saw it as an adult, and it's just gives me the creeps to think about it.
Before they released that director's cut, there used to be like just stills of that floating around the internet, and even those were terrifying.
Yeah.
The Exorcist. So that's a good one to watch this weekend. And this is All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich. We're talking about scary movies today, and we want to hear from you. What is your favorite scary movie? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is 89.7 NPR News.
MTV has announced a reality show about the Occupy protesters, and somebody's trying to trademark the term Occupy Wall Street. That's when you know a movement has taken off, when it becomes a profitable brand. I'm Peter Sagal. Put on your Tea Party jammies and pour yourself a big brimming bowl of new Black Panther flakes. And tune into this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz.
Saturday morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Midland Theater presenting Neo's Dance Theater's Count, The Legend of Dracula, combining rock, pop, and industrial music with video imaging Friday, November 4th. Tickets at midlandtheater.org.
Receive daily updates from WOSU by liking our station on Facebook or by following WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by subscribing to our daily News Loop e-newsletter. Visit wosu.org/email to sign up.
This is 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich, and this is All Sides Weekend. We're talking about scary movies today. With me in the studio, freelance film critic Melissa Starker, Brad Keefe from Columbus Alive, and Hope Madden with The Other Paper. What is your favorite scary movie? 614-292-8513. We'll get to a few calls in just a moment, but first, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974. This scene is from toward the end of the classic movie.
You can make him stop.
No, he can't.
Shut your mouth. Can't be helped, young lady.
Oh, please.
Shut up.
Let them kill me.
No mind.
They're crazy. You gotta make him stop. Please.
Nothing. He's just a cook.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. What makes this one stand out above other slasher movies that keeps you coming back?
It's one of my favorite movies of all time. It's in my top 10 all-time favorite movies. I think in that particular scene, there are like three scenes. There are a lot. But that particular scene, it's a dinner scene, basically. And Tobe Hooper's camera goes back and forth. So you got the point of view of the victim. You got the point of view of this insane family. It's like you're invited into this weird lived-in experience. They have family tics. They make fun of each other. You don't really understand what they're doing. And then they will squiggle. I've never seen a more close up of a person's eyeball than and it's just the victim who's terrified. It's just the most unsettling film, beginning to end. Part of it is because there's no score. Part of it is because it's all in broad daylight. Tobe Hooper just avoids anything that you've gotten used to prepare you for something scary to happen, like a score, you know, like these swelling strings to let you know, or like, you know, shadowy, you know, interiors. None of that's there. It's like out of the blue at any moment, this big trap door is going to open and Leatherface is going to hook you on a meat hook. It's a really scary movie.
Yeah, and it's so kind of gritty and shot, you know, it was shot on a low budget, that it has this almost like driver's ed Death on the Highway, where a seatbelt film kind of like, you know, it feels
like a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and we talked about Paranormal Activity. It's that same kind of like,
it's true.
It's an extra layer of making this feel real and being in that situation.
But yet it's so warped. It's such a warped situation. There's nothing normal to grasp onto. That one definitely warped me as a child.
And we have a caller on the line that wants to talk about another favorite scary movie. But first, let's listen to a quick scene. This is the classic scene from The Silence of the Lambs between Clarice and Hannibal Lecter.
You see a lot, Doctor. Or are you strong enough to point that high-powered perception at yourself? What about it? Why don't you look at yourself and write down what you see?
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
And Andrea from Gahanna, why is this your favorite movie?
Okay, I can't believe you just played that clip. I've got goosebumps. Silence of the Lambs has every quality of what scares people. You know, there's the violence. There's some aspects of it. There's surprise and shock. You know, when Hannibal Lecter has the or when they're taking the police officer away in the ambulance, and then he pulls away the face and reveals that it's actually Hannibal Lecter. And then the greatest scene is when Jodie Foster is in the basement, and it's pitch black, and she's got her hands out, and, you know, she can't see anything. But then the guy has the, you know, the... I don't know what the eye goggles on, and he can see her, and oh my gosh, that is just the suspense of that was just terrifying. I saw that movie in the theater and I thought I was going to die. And then, you know, later on when I see it on TV, I have to watch it with all the lights on, you know, maybe pause it, take a break. Just scary.
All right. Well, thank you very much for telling us about Silence of the Lambs.
Sure.
Thanks. And anyone else want to add anything
to
that?
She mentioned, you know, we actually just on our website at Columbus Live, we just did a countdown of the 10 scariest movie characters. We had two characters from Silence on the Lambs. I mean, you remember Hannibal Lecter, but the Buffalo Bill character would have been just as terrifying.
Yeah, Ted Levine doesn't get credit that he deserves for that movie.
Right.
He's terrifying. And Brandy opens it, wait a minute, is she a great big fat person? Oh, my God,
but
he's awesome.
The clip you played was probably the fava beans line is one of the most. The thing about that is that's so terrifying, and Lecter is locked down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He is, you know, presumably you're safe from him or – Clarice is in that situation, but you're still so scared for her. That, you know, the little shelf that opens up, that's the, like, only, and even that, you know.
Mm-hmm. With Buffalo Bill, he's just out there. And I thought, you know, you guys mentioning it puts the lotion on its body is also one of those just genuinely creepy lines.
All right, and we have another caller on the line. Sam in Columbus, what's your favorite scary movie?
Yeah, it's a movie called Sleepaway Camp. This is probably, and I love scary movies, everything you've talked about today I love, but this is my all-time favorite movie because it is just so bad, and they're making such a good effort to make it genuinely scary. And at the end, it actually does. The end is pretty creepy.
Yeah,
but up until that, it is profane and just hilarious. It's a really... I make all my new acquaintances and friends watch this movie, and they end up loving it. It's a great movie. And it's also, if you get too scared with, you know, The Thing and Chainsaw Massacre and all that stuff, watch this at the end of the night, and it'll feel a little bit better by the end of the evening.
All right, Sam. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad we got that reaction. So hope you're very happy right now.
Struck a nerve, apparently.
Yeah, that's a favorite of mine. And, it's funny because there's a really memorable final scene. It's a freeze frame at the end of the movie, and it's a very memorable scene. And it's so wrong. It's really way wrong that I think people forget that the entire film is very subversive. I'm not saying it's particularly well done, but it's a really subversive film from the beginning to end, so that the end makes more sense than you might think. And one of my favorite things about this movie, there are like four or five sequels, which no one's ever seen, and for good reason. Bruce Springsteen's sister plays the killer in the sequels.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, random fun fact for your day. And now we have Beth from Clintonville. Beth, what's your favorite movie?
My favorite all-time scary movie, which still scares the bejesus out of me today, has got to be, hands down, Rosemary's Baby. That movie is just creepy from beginning to end, and it's just, you never get to see what it is, and it's just like, and they're all, like, real excited, and Ruth Gordon is just the creepiest. I mean,
she's at a loss for words here. We'll have the panel help you out. Thank you, Beth. Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, such a terrific film. I mean, Roman Polanski is a great thriller director, and with that, he had this, you know, terrific source material. Mia Farrow just doing in one of her best performances. John Cassavetes, who is great at playing slightly sleazy and smarmy, so you don't really know exactly, you know, what to think of him. And as she brought up, one of the best things about it is that, you know, in most cases, your mind can conjure up far worse things than any CGI or makeup department can. And by leaving a lot up to the imagination, it really does the viewers a service. You know, especially if you've got the kind of mind that can think of really sick and twisted things.
But it's also like the clip that was played from Texas Chainsaw. It kind of reminds me of some of what scares me in Rosemary's Baby, is this like concept of being alone in this bizarre group where you have no allies among them, and they all are in this same kind of twisted world where you're their victim and there's no one there to help you.
And you can't even really predict what it is they're going to do, because it's so alien. Everything about them is so alien that, you know, your imagination has to – it's at a loss, actually, to just to go to exactly as bad as things are going to get.
And yet their facade almost never really drops of being this caring, nice, elderly couple that just –
Plus, it's a gorgeous movie.
Oh, yeah.
Just like Silence of the Lambs. I mean, it's just beautifully filmed in muted colors. You know, you never get the impression, I'm watching a horror film right now, but – You are.
Well, and the title sounds so lovely. Oh, Rosemary's right. Baby.
And at the end of the day, the devil's inside of you.
Right. You know, movies that make good use of the vulnerability and terror of being hugely pregnant are few and far between. And Mia Farrow, like you said, she's brilliant in this movie. Mm-hmm. She's just the picture of frailty.
Mm-hmm.
And another movie that is a classic, a lot of people mention it in their top 10 lists that you can see at the Gateway this weekend, actually, is The Shining. And in this classic bathroom scene from The Shining, we have Jack Nicholson in it, of course.
Little pigs, let me come in. Here's Johnny.
So The Shining, anyone, is that a favorite of anyone?
Listen to that use of music. It's so great. That is another one of those movies that just has these weird moments that give you no bearing, that you're just like, what the heck is going on? I think, you know, the scene of Shelley Duvall running around the hotel and stopping in this run room where she sees two men.
Yes.
In a
you said bearing, somewhat, so I thought this is where we were going.
Somewhat compromising position. You're not sure, but they both just silently turn and stare at her. There's really nothing to that scene, but yet it's so frightening.
Well, so you're leaving this part out. They're wearing bear masks.
we're laughing so much, but it's really scary. It's that awkward laugh where you're scared, but you're laughing.
Well, honestly, the tracking of that, the, you know, the shots following the kid down the hallway
and down the
and the sound of the big wheel, you know.
Oh yeah,
I get weird flashback chills when I'm walking down a long hallway like that alone.
Yeah, that
sense memory of that movie scares
me. The ones that stand out the most of all are the ones that have really brilliant directors, you know. And when you get some of the all-time best directors who decide, I'm going to try my hand at a horror film, those are the movies that you never forget. And, you know, Kubrick's visual vision for this film is terrifying and gorgeous at the same time.
And we have Terry on the line. Terry from Youngstown, what's your favorite movie?
The Blair Witch Project. I'm 51 years old, and I seen it a couple years ago, and I'll never see it again. It still scares me. I don't get scared often, but this movie, even though it's fictitious, but it's still so real.
All right, Blair Witch Project. So another movie, you know, handheld camera makes it a little scarier, right?
This is one, it's not a movie that has aged that well, and a lot of people, especially if you didn't see it during the hubbub, if you didn't see it on a big screen, if you sort of popped it in your TV and maybe paid attention, maybe didn't. I mean, a lot of people really pass on this one. And I was actually telling Brad earlier, I have a pathological terror of the woods. And there is no film I've ever, and I see a lot of scary movies. There's no film ever that terrified me like this movie did, like ever. I was absorbed and, I was awake at night and I wouldn't get up in case something grabbed me from under my bed. I know people say that. I don't say things like that. I mean, I was terrified by the Blair Witch Project.
I hated it. I'm maybe the only person in the world, and it's maybe because I love Joe Berlinger so much. I like Blair Witch 2 better than Blair Witch.
Wow. You are the one. Yeah.
I'm surprised. I probably could get a blurb on the DVD cover because I may be the only person who liked that. But I remember first time seeing it was built into that hype. And that, that had like the first marketing campaign that really probably a majority of the audience thought it was real going in, which I think is a little unfair. And with that, like, palm of your hands audience, I don't think they delivered enough. I wanted to, a lot of that, we talk a lot about, like, it's in your imagination. I wanted to see just a glimpse of something, and there wasn't enough for me. And you're right, it hasn't aged well.
No.
Yeah.
The cast was not maybe the most talented.
Right. But seeing it in that first flush, it was like, I can even remember like driving back from the screening and it was rainy and dark and I just couldn't shake that movie. It took a while.
Well, I think the thing was is that I saw it the same night as I saw Funny Games for the first night.
Oh.
And I thought that was a much better film.
And let's, we're running out of time, so let's try to get to a couple more callers. Mitchell in Grove City, what's your favorite scary movie?
My favorite was Phantasm. I saw it as a teenager, and it just really, really scared me with that chrome ball flying through the air and the cinematography. You just really felt that not only was there absolutely no chance they would survive, but you were literally shocked they were still alive throughout the whole movie. At least that was my reference to it.
All right. I don't know that I've actually heard of this one. But,
oh, that's a good one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little cult classic. It's very dated when you watch it now. It's very 80s, and big sections of it look like a Ronnie James Dio video. But the tall man is still creepy.
The tall man is still very creepy, and I think he's made a decent career out of that, actually, since. It's just another one of those movies where just odd things happen for no reason that you can figure out. And when it came out at the time and the effects were a little bit more to date, it was more effective. But there's definitely still parts of that that creep me out.
So that was
Phantasm.
Phantasm.
And there's actually a few sequels, most of them not as good as.
Okay. It is a lot scarier than Fantasia.
Yes, see, my brain went Disney. I don't know why. Okay. And Adam in Clintonville, what's your favorite?
Hey, I would have to say Jacob's Ladder.
Underrated.
Yeah.
Good one. That's
good
a good
call.
One.
And
just,
why that?
I mean, just the acting of it alone is, I mean, Tim Robbins, I don't know if he won anything for that, but, I mean, that movie could have held up to any other movie in its day.
It was really good.
Acting. I mean, the effects are kind of cheesy. I don't know if it would have done better with CGI, but...
But that shaky cam effect is still pretty good.
I mean, it was really good at that. What did I just catch a glimpse of? That moment where he's in the subway tunnel and a tunnel full of maybe demons, just a train full of them just goes by and he kind of catches a glimpse of it at this point where he's sort of losing a grasp on his mind anyhow. Yeah, that's a really good movie, Adam. Thanks
for it does a nice job of you're never quite sure if you're watching something supernatural or, psychological. And when I think when that's blended well, I think people make an attempt at that a lot and it doesn't usually pull off. But they do it maybe in this better than in anything else, actually. You're never entirely sure.
All right. And Kathleen in Columbus, you get the last movie recommendation. What would you like to talk about?
Big fan here of the whole Dracula genre, and I didn't hear the beginning of the show, so I don't know if you've covered it, but geez, I love Nosferatu. There is Max Schreck, and they've even made the movie about was he really a vampire or not, but he is so wonderful, and it being filmed in black and white, and the shadows, the chiaroscuro effect, is just so wonderful. I'm just really scared to death of watching that movie again. I went to see it in a theater at an art cinema in Washington, D.C., and boy, oh boy. Woo! I love your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Kathleen. All right, Dracula.
Still holds up.
Yep.
And Shadow of the Vampire is the movie that she mentioned.
Yeah.
For that's a really good creepy funny combination with Willem Dafoe as Max Schreck and John Malkovich as F.W. Murnau.
All right.
But yeah, Nosferatu is it's the best of the vampire movies. I mean, that's it is for my money, it's the best one that you can see.
And we're down to just the last minute, so enough time for each of you to make one recommendation for this weekend, something to pick up at the Redbox or maybe go see. There's a few theaters that are showing a few scary movies. So, Brad, what one would you recommend?
I'm actually not going to recommend a movie. I'm going to recommend a musical from my favorite horror movie. currently, Catco is doing Evil Dead the Musical. It's in the last weekend. I've seen it twice. If you're a B-horror fan and a Sam Raimi fan, you got to go see it. It's a blast.
All right, Melissa?
If you have never seen it, you really need to see the 1932 film Freaks. It's directed by Todd Browning, the same guy who did the original Dracula with Bela Lugosi. And Todd Browning is a former circus performer. It's got a cast made up mostly of real sideshow performers, but it's very sympathetic to them. But there are also some of the most creepy images in the final minutes of that film. It's really terrific. And the version that people can see is seriously truncated from the original version.
And Hope?
The Gateway is showing Psycho, and I just feel like anytime you can get a chance to see almost any Hitchcock, but certainly this one on a big screen, you ought to take advantage.
All right. So lots of choices for everyone. This has been All Sides Weekend, talking about scary movies. Thank you to Melissa Starker, freelance film critic. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And also thanks to Brad Keefe with Columbus Alive. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy.
And thank you to Hope Madden from The Other Paper. Thank you, Hope.
Thank you.
And when we return from the break, we'll be talking about the Day of the Dead celebration in Columbus. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News.
To protect the life of a dog who is being abused, the hero of Scott Spencer's novel, Man in the Woods, gets into a fight and accidentally kills the man abusing the dog. In shock, he thinks,
"How can this be happening?" And he wishes, suddenly, fervently, that there was a God.
We'll hear from Scott Spencer on the next Fresh Air.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. For $60 per year, you can support 89.7 NPR News and be a member at our basic level. You'll receive a member card, a subscription to Newsweek magazine, plus electronic versions of our airfare program guide in our e-newsletter. Visit WOSU.org.
Support for 89.7 comes from Alpaca Fest 2011, where visitors will see alpaca and learn about this earth-friendly livestock this weekend, October 29th and 30th at the Champions Expo Center in Springfield. More information at OhioAlpacaAssociation.com.
This week in This American Life, email from a 14-year-old.
Dear This American Life, I just escaped the iron-gated prison that is commonly known as middle school. But in all the time I have listened to your show, I have never heard an episode devoted to what goes on inside the walls of a middle school.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. This week, the angst and drama of middle school from Bubba Radio International.
Saturday afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News.
No sé qué tienen las flores, llorona. Las flores del campo santo. No sé qué tienen las flores, llorona, las flores del campo santo. Que cuando las mueve el viento, llorona,
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurovich. And what we're listening to is a popular Day of the Dead song, La Llorona, which means the weeping woman. And Day of the Dead is a Mexican celebration on November 1st and 2nd. And Columbus has its very own Day of the Dead community event being held this weekend and throughout the next week at the Global Gallery on High Street in Clintonville. Joining me in the studio to talk about this event and the holiday is Leticia Vasquez Smith. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
And Leticia is the owner of Azteca Catering, fine Mexican cuisine, and has been organizing this event for the past 6 years. So for those who don't know what it is and maybe have never heard of it, tell us what Day of the Dead celebrates.
Day of the Dead celebrates the meaning of really life. What we do in Mexico, I want to talk a little bit about the Mexican celebration, and it's also in Latin America. Mm-hmm. Basically, what we do is remembering the loved ones that had lived.
And how do you do that? What's a part of the celebration? I know that food is a big part of it, and also tell me a little bit about what you would, if you were in Mexico or a Latin American country, what you would be doing.
In Mexico, people are accustomed to go to the cemeteries, and they go there and they clean the cemetery, the graves, and they bring flowers, and they will bring the picnic, and they will do a picnic there, and they also bring music, mariachi, and it's a big, big celebration, full of color. In the big cities like Mexico City, what we do is we will have an altar in our houses, and it can be very elaborated or it can be something very simple. So we go from a simple table with a tablecloth. We will set flowers, water, incense, candles, fruit, and different dishes. We will include also tequila if the people like tequila. Mm-hmm. That's something that can be found in the table, and the portrait of the people that we love. And it's funny because now we also incorporate pets. You know, you can put your pet's picture there. Also, if you want to do like a contest in your neighborhood, you can have different altars displaying outside in a little plaza. And then people will go into the contest and they will do different altars with different levels. And actually, there are 7 levels that there were used in the beginning. And the interesting thing is that in the pre-Columbian times, the Aztecs believed that you have to go underground 7 levels in order to get to the Mictlan, which is the place of the dead. So basically, you can do a simple altar or have 7 levels and incorporate all these elements. And it's very important that you have flowers, incense, candle, fruit, and we do like different cooking, like the pumpkin. Mm-hmm. We will do it in a sugar cane, which is called piloncillo. So we do the pumpkin, we do the mole, with chicken, tamales, everything.
So it's remembering those who you have lost, but it's also a celebration of their life. You incorporate their favorite foods and their pictures and everything, right? So how does that translate into a celebration here in Columbus? Can you tell me a little bit about what you do at the Global Gallery specifically?
Yes. At the Global Gallery this year, we are doing for the whole week the Day of the Dead community event. And what happened is that basically Latino Arts for Humanity is under the umbrella of Global Gallery, and we're working together in this event that really goes out of your house to get into the community. So you just don't do the altar anymore only in your house, but we want to incorporate the whole community and try to see if the society will embrace this celebration. So what we're doing is we're doing altars, we're doing different presentations, music, we have people doing poetry, we have different artists doing artwork, different pieces, drawings, pictures, paintings, all kind of things.
Yes, and it's a week-long celebration, too. So is that something that they do in Mexico and other Latin American countries? Does the celebration spread out over a week?
That's a good question. Actually, the celebration after the Spanish conquest, it is done on November 1st and 2nd. But originally was done at the end of August, mm-hmm. during the Aztec times. I understand that Guatemala and other countries, they also do it now in November 1st and 2nd, just because it comes with the Catholicism and it goes to the All Saints. But when we do, actually in Mexico, when we do a contest, it will go all the week. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to do, you know, the whole art and community and festivity and try to preserve this tradition here in Columbus.
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich, and we are talking about the Day of the Dead and the celebrations and events that are happening here in Columbus in celebration of Day of the Dead. And joining me in the studio is the organizer of the events, Leticia Vasquez-Smith. And you can give us a call. We have about 10 minutes remaining if you have a question or a comment about Day of the Dead, 614-292-8513. That's 614-292-8513. So tell us a little bit about going to the Global Gallery. And you said that you've been organizing this for 6 years. So I assume that it's grown over those 6 years, right? And what type of growth have you seen?
Yes, basically it started as a workshop in 99, part of the country presentation for the Columbus International Program. And then it went out to my house and with my friends every year. And we really feel the necessity to share that with the community. So in 2005, we start doing in small spaces like galleries, the Chor North. And then we did one more at the Decapa. You know, it grew to the music hall, to the Dude Locker last year. And so basically what we do have this Saturday, that is the opening, we're going to have artist Angela Morales with the opening, and she's going to present a big paper mache piece. And also we will have a workshop of sugar skulls for anyone that wants to go and do the workshop and learn how to do the sugar skulls.
Yeah, tell me about sugar skulls, because I'm sure people have seen those before and not even realized that they were associated with the celebration. So what is making a sugar skull entail? What do you do?
Yes, sugar skulls is very interesting because also it goes all the way back to the Aztec times where they used to expose the skulls as something very honorable. So what we do now in Mexico, I'm talking about that because it's the country that mm-hmm. I'm from, we exchange sugar skulls in Mexico City with your college at work during the November 1st and 2nd, and they are made of sugar, or they can be also made of chocolate. What they represent is life after, meaning it's just a step to a new life, mm-hmm. or the cycle of life. That's what we believe. So sugar skulls are made in a little mold. Unfortunately, we don't have the molds that are all like a circular, if you want to call them. So these skulls are going to be a little bit flat, but they will come with sugar, and then you can decorate them with icy in different colors. So just come and enjoy that workshop.
And we have Lucy from Columbus. Lucy, what's your question about the event?
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to know the cost to get into the event and the hours, please.
Sure, we can go over that. Leticia, tell me about the cost. I feel most of it's free, right?
Yes, Saturday at the 29th all the way through Thursday the 3rd is going to be free, and it's open from 8 to 8, so you can come and see the altar exhibitions and the artwork. And Friday, November the 4th, we actually having a Bolivian Orphanage Project fundraiser, and that is going to be $5. So children under 10 will be free, and your support benefits the Annie Children's Foundation.
And we should mention that there's a link on our website, wosu.org/allsides, with all of the information, and you can see the program of events. And also, on your website, what's the website for them to go directly?
We have a blog. Go to Latino Arts for Humanity, and you can see all the program. We can also, you can also check us in Facebook.
Okay. And we have Tim from Columbus. Tim, what is your question?
Hello. My wife is from Central America, and I was wondering, has this holiday spread to Central and South America, and how it might be different from how it's celebrated in Mexico? Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. And has it spread?
Actually, I know that Guatemalan and Central America, they celebrate basically the same way that we do, like small villages. They go out and they have all the way the cempasúchil flower, which is like kind of marigold flower. And it's something very interesting because I know Brazil, they also celebrate Day of the Dead. But I'm not sure if Argentina, Venezuela, and other countries south there celebrate it.
And you, I think that I remember you reading that you have started this celebration and wanted to start having these events because you wanted to expose other people in Columbus to this piece of your culture, and also to encourage the immigrant community here in Columbus to get together and celebrate rather than keeping it in their house, right?
Exactly. And also because I would like to share with the community that this is nothing scary. Day of the Dead is no like a Halloween, you know.
It happens to be near Halloween, but it's not scary.
Exactly. Right. We grew up with the, you know, with the skulls, claws, and we have in the culture a lot of poetry about this, and we have a lot of comics about skulls, and it's just something to make fun of. We are not scared about it, and it's nothing to be with the Halloween. For the media, you know, everybody is exposed to media, and kids would like to wear a costume, but it's not necessary for Mexicans or other Latin American countries to just do Halloween. They can do Halloween now because we can say no to the kids if they would like to wear their costume. But we want to preserve this tradition, because I guess it's something good that anyone is looking for. We want to be in kind of close to the people that left. We want to have them here. So it's a way to remember them. And if we remember them, they will be here.
And you're inviting members of the community to bring their own pictures and their own memories to the altar you have set up at the Global Gallery, right?
Yes, we have a community altar, and they can come and bring candles, so they can come and bring a little bit of some kind of message. We always say you can send a message to them if you want, because it's something used to take out that feeling that you have, that's something that you want to say. So write something down and place it, fold it and place it under the glasses that we will have with water in the community altar. And that's a way to say hello to somebody else.
Great. So this is all of this is taking place at the Global Gallery on High Street, right?
Yes.
In Clintonville?
3535 North High Street.
Okay, and we're down to our last 30 seconds. So how about this weekend, you have artists and a lot of great music. What's one event you wanted to highlight that's this weekend?
This weekend, we probably can say that come and listen to the poetry. We have different people from Cuba, from Dominican Republic, from Venezuela, and other countries that are going to be reading their poetry. Guillermo Arango, Daniel Montoli, Juan Armando Rojas, and also something very interesting is The Art of Housing, The Cycle of Life by Ruben Castillo-Herrera.
Okay, great. So that's the Day of the Dead community events happening for the next week, basically, here in Columbus. For more information, visit wosu.org/allsides, and we have a link for you. And Leticia, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
This is All Sides Weekend, and this is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at wosu.org.